All right, welcome back to the Operation Shutdown podcast. This one's a little different. We're going to be cutting this one into three parts. Part one is with Al Kaminsky, a short interview I did with him on our brew day, in which we brewed, well, I'll let him explain it. Part two is a review of our brew day with Easy Pretzel and Ed Grohl. And part three, we discuss the beer after its release, our thoughts on the tasting notes, our thoughts on this style, and a little bit of other stuff. A special thanks to Al for bringing us down for the brew day, and a thank you to Eric, our loyal listener, for coming along and helping. It was great to have him there. Finally, a little disclosure. On the brew day, Al did buy us a couple of beers and some pizza, but that doesn't mean that the things that I have to say about him or his beer aren't true. It really did turn out great, and I hope you enjoy listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed making it. All right, let's kick it off.
Commence the Operation Shutdown. Episode 13. The Legend. Wait for it. Dairy Podcast.
All right, welcome back to the Operation Shutdown, or just welcome to it. I'm here today with Al from Pizza Boy Brewing. Al was kind enough to ask us to join him today. Easy Pretzel, I, and Eric, one of our good listeners, to come and brew a beer. What did we brew today, Al?
We brewed a lactose milk sugar IPA.
Nice. And no. Now you're not real excited about this one, are you?
I'm not excited at all about this, actually. I'm not particularly not into this style of beer. I'm not a fan. I don't think anyone should be a fan. But we're doing it because there are fans of it, and I can't dictate everything.
That's true. How'd you get talked into this?
Ask Pretzel.
We'll get it from him later. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about the brew?
Today's brew gets out of our comfort zone in that we used about 12% oats in an IPA, which we don't do. We used 6% lactose milk sugars in an IPA, which we don't do. And our mash temperature was ridiculously high today at 158 degrees, which we don't do. So Terry's a little uncomfortable with it because it's going to be a sweet IPA, and we tend to not like sweet IPAs. We want to get them dry and bitter with a good balance. So I'm kind of excited about it in a way that it's something different to see what we get out of it. But this will most likely be a one and done.
One and done. Now, we just got it into the fermenter, right?
Yes, sir.
And what's it sitting on in the fermenter?
So we racked yeast in, and then after the yeast, we put a 42-pound box of apricots, which we think it'll lose most of the aroma and the flavor during primary fermentation, but we did it just to kind of give it a base. So later, when we go through secondary fermentation with all of the fruit, that it'll have something better to grab onto.
Awesome. And about how long until we see this come on tap?
I'm going to guess 4 weeks. This brew is particularly tricky because after about 70% of primary fermentation, we'll be racking it onto the fruit. We're really not sure yet if we're going to use pineapples or if we're going to use peaches or if we're going to split them both and do half peach, half pineapple. So Monday when we... Today's Thursday, so Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we'll be sampling it, seeing how the product, how horrible it turned out. And when we see how horrible it turned out, we'll then decide whether we want to do the pineapples, the peaches, or both. From there, it'll be another 7 days, estimated 7 days for secondary fermentation. Once that is completely done, is the time when we'll dry hop it. And then from the time of dry hopping, it'll be another 7 days. And then we cold crash for approximately a week before kegging because we don't filter anything here. It's all done naturally. We just give it time.
Nice. We'll make sure that we look forward to checking it out. I'm really excited about it. I know Easy Pretzel's really excited about it.
That someone is.
Terry was very much not.
Yes.
Now, you gave us a great tour here today. It was phenomenal. It was great to be able to see everything. But the part about today that I noticed, other than you showing us around the place and the impressive investment in machinery and ingenuity that you have here in your brewing process, it was just how much demand you have on your time. because while we were here, you got called aside by a couple different vendors. You had to deal with a broken refrigerator for your hot sauce. You had a guy from Trokes come in here trying
to... those guys, if Torchbearer Sauces is listening, send someone over to fix your refrigerator, please.
Yes, Torchbearer, come fix your fridge. But you had all these people, you know, calling for your time. You're trying to run a restaurant. You're running a brewery. You're very busy here. You started at 7 a.m. today.
Yeah. Yes, that's correct.
And you have people calling for your time at all the time, right?
Yes.
How do you keep it all straight?
One person at a time. Just don't ever stick your head out of it and try to look at what the big picture is and how much is really going on. We just take it in little segments and just get through it. Easy.
Good. Let's change gears a little bit. Today, as we speak, a new law was passed here in Pennsylvania, which is going to, I think, make a big change. You think it's going to make a big change in the beer distribution business and for brewers, correct?
Yes, this is correct.
And this happens after just yesterday, you having your name thrown and associated with this law, correct?
Incorrectly associated with it, yes, incorrectly.
Yeah, thank you for correcting that. So it's incorrectly associated with it. What we're, in short, what we're going to be seeing is six packs sold in beer distributors, your typical monotop beer distributors that you have in your neighborhood. Six packs will be sold there, and we think there's a slippery slope here, right?
Yeah, this is like a really long conversation, but to shorten it and make it kind of specific would be. Beer distributors are supposed to be there for beer distribution on the wholesale or warehousing level. So cases, kegs, that was the tried and true. Retail shops, six packs, singles. That's why there was always an ounce limit. A distributor could not sell below a certain amount of ounces, and a retail shop cannot sell above a certain amount of ounces, making a concise line so that both businesses can be protected at the end of the day. What's happening now is... local distributors, I should say, are the ones that sell retailers their beer. So just for example, we purchase our beer from X distributor who is local. We are required by the state to purchase the beer by the case from the distributor. The distributor is now allowed to sell six packs, probably singles. They're going to put crowlers and growlers and do all this stuff that we do. So now I'm forced to purchase my beer from the direct competition, who is also selling beer per unit price cheaper. So if I went in as a customer, I could buy a six-pack cheaper than what they're going to sell me a case, which I have to purchase four six-packs. So the strange thing is that I think that we should be able to... retailers probably should be able to purchase six-packs from the distributor as well, right? I mean, to be fair with it and for it to be a level playing field... then we can stock 300 brands of beer, because if we only have to purchase one six-pack at a time to put into our inventory, I can now stock every beer that there is because I don't have a whole case invested into my inventory for 300 brands, 300 cases of beer, whereas I could have 75 cases of beer into it for the same amount. But there's strict ruling there that we still have to purchase by the case, which is kind of backhanded to say that the distributors have been complaining about selling cases. So they got 12 packs. Now 12 packs aren't good enough, so now they're going to get 6 packs. And when 6 packs aren't good enough, they're going to get singles. When singles aren't good enough, they're going to sell 2-ounce samples. When 2-ounce samples aren't good enough, and they realize that it's their own doing because they run such sloppy establishments that are not kept to temperature, not humidity controlled, the beer's hot and cold every day that's sitting out on the floor. At the end of the day, they're going to have the same issue they have now, but they're going to be sitting on a huge amount of inventory because they're not going to sell as much. Because now instead of walking in and buying a case, you're going to buy a six-pack, and the individuals will be holding less beer in their homes is really what it's going to come down to, I think. This is how I feel personally about it. And then at the end of that, in 4 months, what will the distributors ask for then? Do they want the state to maybe step in and bail them out, help them out? They pretty much have a license to print money right now. They get free money. They buy beer from someone, they add their profit to it, their markup, and then they resell it. The state tells me that I have to purchase my beer from X distributor. I'm not allowed to go anywhere else. So I think to make the playing field level, they should allow all the retailers in the state to purchase their alcohol wherever they want to purchase it from. Wherever. I'm always impressed with distributors that take care of their product, that keep their floors air-conditioned or kept at a normal heat, and they take care of the beer. So why not allow the retailers, now that they're allowing the distributors to compete directly with us, to allow us to buy our beer wherever we want, instead of saying you have to go to X distributor? I think that would cause distributors to actually tighten up their game, maybe care a little bit more about what they're doing, because they're not guaranteed an income then. And if that happens, I think that we would see an entire different motto, and I think that the beer would be kept, and the quality of the beer would increase dramatically.
For the people that are listening to this, other than writing their legislator, which, look, no one does that, the thing they should really do is support their local bottle shops, right?
Definitely, yes. I mean, it's all about local business, always. We're local. Eat local, drink local, pee local, you know?
Well, if you're drinking local, you're usually peeing local, right?
This is true.
Well, thank you for your time today. Is there anything else you want to discuss? It was really great for you to have us here. We're going to talk about the day, you know, the three of us. But I really want to say thank you for coming on. Anything else you have to add?
No, I don't think so. It was nice having you guys here. It was fun to brew a beer one time. That's about it.
Yeah. I want to give a special thanks to Al for having us, to Terry for showing us around, and for Raj for being a really big, nice guy. He's as nice as he is big, and he's a big dude. But Al, Al, thank you so much for having us. It was really great to be here. We're a big supporter of Pizza Boy, and Al, you did a lot for me whenever I first started getting into beer, introducing me to the styles and the flavors. No one's been better to their customers than you. Wish you all the luck in the future.
Well, thank you, man. I appreciate that, and thanks for your time.
Thank you. All right, welcome to part two of the Legendary Podcast. You just heard from Al, and now I'm welcomed by friends of the show, Easy Pretzel, and Ed Grohl. Thanks for coming on, guys.
Thanks for having us, Bill.
Thank you.
All right, so Easy, you were down there for the brew day. Ed, you showed up a little late. You were there. It was a really great day. We started about 10:30. The brew had started earlier than that because Al was really concerned he wasn't going to get it all done by the end of the day. And we were there for the whole day. We were there from 10:30 till 5:30, and it was a great day. We got to help a little bit with the brew, which was really exciting and really nice. He gave us the whole tour. We saw the whole place, soup to nuts, and had multiple long, in-depth conversations with him about the business, about brewing, his brewing philosophy, his theories about where craft beer is going, specifically in Pennsylvania, the difficulties of being a small businessman, and then also got to watch what those difficulties were, because they were ever present throughout the day. But before we get to all that, let's talk a little bit about the beer that got brewed. And in part three, we're hoping to get a quick recording of us drinking the beer and giving our thoughts on it. But this was a big beer. It was really taxing both Al and Terry as far as their comfort levels with what brewing does. And I can tell you Terry was kind of sweating a little bit at certain points because he just wasn't really comfortable, I think, with this type of brew. It had a ton of oats in it. It had 100 pounds worth of lactose sugars. It was just a lot of stuff at temperatures that they never do. And at multiple points, Al and Terry were both saying, this is part of the brew, we never do that. This is part of the brew, we never do that. These are temperatures on the brew that we never reach. In multiple junctures throughout this brewing process, these guys were doing things that they just never do. And that was kind of fun to watch, although it was also, you had to be okay with watching someone moving outside their comfort zone. And I think that was part of the fun for this. And what brought this on was Easy reaching out on Twitter and kind of saying, hey, you know, let's do this. You reached out to him on Twitter. You said, hey, you should do this. And the retort seemed to be, sure, you're in it, though. What were you trying to do? Why this style of beer?
So at the first actually thing part, I came, took my family out, and my neighbor, we were out there and we were just talking about, they had tired hands. They always have tired hands on draft at Al's. It's great. I love Tired Hands. They're one of the best breweries, I think, in the country. And Al walked over. I go, Al, when are you making a milkshake beer? He goes, never. He kept going. And I went over. He came back over and he talked to me. He was busy. We were talking about the style, and he just something that he doesn't like to do. They like to do things a little bit differently, and their style IPAs. And I was like, that would be just great, something different than you guys have for us to have it on tap. Because Tired Hands is great and gives us lots of great beers here, but they don't give the milkshake to Al. So I was like, I would love to have something like that, just to have. It's a great crushable beer. You know, I know it's different than some of the traditionalist IPAs where they love these balanced IPAs and they got to do everything perfect. This is fruit and lactose and all these crazy dry hops and late hop additions. It's kind of different than everybody likes, but that's something the flavor I love, and I think it's great and drinkable. So I actually tweeted him a picture of Peter Griffin doing the milkshake dance, saying brings all the girls to the yard. And that's when he finally said, okay. He's like, come in and brew it. He's like, what the hell? And then we started texting back and forth. And he was asking me some ideas about the recipe. And then he said, hey, let's get this in the podcast, because you've wanted him on the podcast for a while. And he said, hey, let's make this all part of the group. And I could do the podcast. I could brew this beer. I'm never doing it again, even if it's fantastic. You know, it's just not his style. I hope he changes his tune, because so far it looks amazing. So we're recording this now. The beer is not out yet, but it should be out soon. It's got to settle. It's got a lot of those hops. When you add 88 pounds of hops late, all that fruit, all that pineapple, and all the peach in the other one, got to let that kind of settle out in the bright tank. So
Today he added vanilla beans, right?
Yeah, he's got to have it rest on there. So I think that's kind of the trick that Tired Hands does. And it was funny. The one thing I was worried about with Al, I said, hey, is Tired Hands going to be okay that, you know, you're making a milkshake beer? I didn't want to, like, bite off their style. And I saw a couple guys on Instagram and Facebook saying, it sounds like Tired Hands. And I was like, fuck you. I was like, he's doing it because of me. I was like, you know, that's not because of biting off Tired Hands. So the first person to like his photo about the milk sugar IPA was Tired Hands. So I think they're pretty cool with it. Him just trying something different. So I was excited about it.
Yeah. And Al was one of the first people to put Tired Hands on. So anyone who thinks that he's just, like, trying to bite their shit is out of their minds.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that there is ways to emulate in a respectful way, and there's ways that you just end up ripping some people off, and this is not the latter. So, helping out with the brew and watching that unfold was really great. But the other part of this was just the tour that he took us around. One of the great parts of that was when you're in the in-house, you see, you know, where the brewing takes place, but you don't actually get to see just all that goes on behind there. It's kind of cloaked away a little bit. And we got to pull back the curtain and actually see all the process. We stood there with Al for an hour while he filled kegs, peppering him with questions about things. He took us up to the upstairs portion where he holds the grain, grinds it, conveys it back, shows us where his heating system is for his water. Gave us a ridiculous amount of information on the cleaning processes that he goes through for the system. And at each juncture, what I took away from it was just how thoughtful the process was. The amount of interaction that goes in and planning with the BrowCon, and actually creating this system for, and parts of it where he was actually helping to develop ways in order to build efficiencies into the system. And one of the little ones I really took away that I thought was just kind of ingenious and slightly just brilliant in so many ways was to he had talked about how he asked an engineer and developer that he had for their water heating system if they could add a heat exchanger in where the exhaust gases from the heating elements go through and then run the water through there prior to filling the tank so as to basically preheat the water before it goes in and to siphon off some of that that energy so that you're not wasting more of it. And it's these little things that he talked about that existed in it by building efficiencies into the system, making it as efficient and as well-made as he could afford and he could find because he's making such a long-term investment. It's an investment for the business long-term and for his family. He's looking 10, 25 years down the road. And it's those long-term look, but also fighting day in, day out, the juxtaposition of trying to fight through each day, but also trying to have that long field of vision that really shows you just how hard it can be to be both a businessman and a brewer.
And I think if you take a look at some of these guys in these home brew guilds, and I'm actually part of one. I've been home brewing for 10 years, but I mean, a lot of these guys think their stuff is so great and they know what they're doing, and hey, it's so easy. Let me just go get a loan and open the system. But he literally, Al goes through each step. I mean, we were talking about the grain. He gets individual bags because he wants to make sure he gets the right malt. He's not getting something he's not in the quality. He goes through the heat exchange, those kind of things. He spends extra money. I mean, thousands, tens of thousands, you know, from probably the whole tour is hundreds of thousands, if not $1 million more than probably anybody would normally spend because he wants to do it right. And he knows his business is going to be successful long term. And I think those are the kind of lessons that these breweries, and I'm a big fan of talking about the bubble because I think the bubble's here. I think it's already here. And I think it's going to continue to go. But people doing it right like Al are not going to be part of the bubble because they don't have to worry about it because they're doing it right. And they're going to protect themselves financially because they're setting themselves up to be successful in the future. And every step of the way is what I was impressed about with Al, that he went above and beyond what was needed to make sure that everything runs smoothly, everything is cost efficient in the long run, even though you're going to spend a little bit more money up front. And most people are just trying to get by and put out some, hey, I need to hurry, you know, run as fast as you can to get these beers out. And you do it wrong, and now it's going to cost you more money in the long run.
Yep. And part of that is that he was setting this system up like this is what the business is, and it's what he envisions it being for the next 10-plus years. He's not looking at it as expansion, as growth. He's looking at it as, what do I want my niche to be? What's the size I want? How hard do I want to work in order to achieve that, and then what is my life like once I've reached that point? He's still working incredibly hard, but at some point he will have, you know, reached that equilibrium. I kind of got the sense and the hope, and it's not about just continuing to grow. He's not looking to run as fast as he can. He's running a steady pace, and it's meant for the long haul.
He ran a good steady pace when he first started too, and I think that's a key element to opening a brewery. You know, you got to make sure that you are getting good stuff out there that sets yourself apart from the Johnny Come Lately guys that come in here that, you know, won a bronze at a homebrew competition and got a loan. And he did a really good job with that. And I know that they were on the ropes, I think, with the pizza business. And he said, you know what, I'm into this. Let's throw everything we have at this and let's do it right. And I think that that's a really good testament to him. And now, I mean, everything's kind of on cruise control. He could make up a style at this point and make it work. And I think that's, and I love he's so crass about it too. He's like, I don't give a shit. I'm doing this. And I don't care if you nerds like it or don't. And he always does it right, and it always seems to work out for him. And I think that's a real testament to his business policy.
Yep.
And I think actually, if you talk to Al, is now his pizza business is so successful, and that's what I love. And is as a person who loves this business part of this whole boom and everything that's going on, is he is so successful with his pizza business. I forget how he's got like 10 delivery drivers going at night. I mean, he is just cranking out pizza. You go in there, it's packed every day for lunch. It's packed every day for dinner. And that allows him to have financial success, and then he can do. I think that maybe makes him do some more risky things with some of his beers. He tries different styles. He's doing a goose. He's doing other things that people might not like. And it's great. But on the flip side, this guy's got to run a pizza business. It's hard to run any business, let alone a huge, gigantic, successful pizza business. How he managed his time, I really can't tell you. We were there. He had literally the refrigerator broke with the hot sauce fridge. Like, you don't even need a hot sauce fridge. He's got a hot sauce fridge for the customers. That broke. He's got the Trogs guy coming in. Hey, I want to talk about, here's the new Blizzard of Hops. You know, he's got us coming in. He's got customers coming in that know him. He's got, you know, Terry's coming in asking questions. You know, he's got other facilities where he's got beer that he's worried about with, you know, aging. How he does that and runs a successful restaurant, I don't understand how it is, but I think that that's a testament that it's really hard to run a business, and this is really, really hard. And I think he's, well, one of the reasons he's successful, because he's a very organized, well-run business person.
He did something magical that not a lot of people can pull off, and that is he took his core business, like the people who came into his place, which are, oh, we need a pizza, we need a Stromboli, we need this, we need that, we need a 12-pack of Coors Light, we need a 40, and he integrated that into this giant beer model and did not shun those people on the way in either. He found a way to integrate both things together. That is freaking genius. He still has plastic 40 bottles in his cooler and still does, you know, line up and we're going to do Strombolis, we're going to do takeout pizzas, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. He still has Coors Light in his fridge. He knows where his roots are, and yet he still embraces the craft beer thing. And that's an amazing juxtaposition of philosophies that not a lot of people could pull off. And I think that that is genius.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think to go back to this concept of him being pulled in various directions, you talked about the hot sauce fridge, you talked about the Trogs guy showing up, but then he had a woman show up who was a rep who was bringing in takeout containers. And he needed to pick, you know, what's my next order going to be? He's got a food order that came in that he had to sign off on. At every juncture, his time was being called upon, and being a brewer is like being a babysitter. You do a whole lot of work, and then you sit there and you need to make sure that at every step of that brew process, things are going properly. And that's why Terry's there. Al's hands are right there in it. And while this is all going on, he's filling kegs. He's slinging kegs, heavy-ass kegs. He's picking them up. He's putting them into the filling machine. They're getting cleaned out. They're coming out heavy as hell and full. And he's piling them up, and he's throwing the labels on, and he's capping them, and he's packaging them to go out the door. This guy is doing literally the heavy lifting of his business day in, day out. And while this is all going on that day that we were there, the House and the Senate had finalized a bill.
Of Pennsylvania, for our non-Pennsylvanians.
Yeah, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania's General Assembly had finalized legislation that was, and you heard him talk about it in part one of this podcast, that frankly was, in his opinion, and I tend to agree with him based upon my understanding of the law, and look, I'm not a legal scholar, but by listening to him and looking at it, to my eyes, is an assault on his business and to other bottle shops that are out there. And we're going to talk about this a little bit now. But while this is all going on, he's sitting there thinking about what's the long-term prospects of my business with the changing landscape. You know, craft beer is in constant state of turmoil, different styles, an assault of new breweries coming online literally every single day. Growth, growth, growth everywhere. People pushing for expansion. Buyouts, macros, buying regional breweries or local breweries and then creating price wars. It is a cutthroat business. And then on top of that, we have a government regulations that are stepping in and he's standing there going, I don't know what my business is going to look like. So let's talk about this new law.
I like, you know, I, we were actually, I was talking with Ed before the podcast. I'd like to hear his thoughts
Yeah.
Now he's got some inside. I got some inside information, but I think Ed might have some better inside information than what I got. So I'd like to hear his thoughts on the new law and the impact that it's going to have on some of these six pack shops.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, I will go first. One of the things that Al was worried about was that he's buying beer from his competition, which puts him behind the eight ball. Obviously, you think, well, they can undersell me no matter what they do. But the way the law was drawn up, he might be overestimating the law change impact. And from what I understand, the local distributors still have to buy from the main wholesalers. So he's not going to have to go and buy from Westies, and they're going to undercut him because they're paying the same price from the same wholesaler. It's not, oh, hey, well, I have to buy from Westies and they can undercut me. So everyone's getting from the same like top tier is my understanding of how this law was drawn up. Like Glenn Miller's Breskies, for anybody who's out of state, those are our local distros and everything's three tier and it's weird. Technically, yeah, you're competing with them, but you're not competing with them on price because he's not going to Breskies and buying these
beers. I don't think he's competing with Breskies, but Westies is that different distributor license. They're the ID or whatever number, you know, whatever letter it is. They are the wholesaler. So I think that if you go to Westies, you might get a cheaper price for a six pack of Miller Lite than you go to Al's.
And that could
buy from Westies.
And that could be. But
that's the
problem
that he had, and if anybody listened to the beginning of this podcast, this was a month ago before the law was actually official. It's changed a little bit since then. But from my understanding of what the law was, from when I read a copy of it, and it literally changed it. I've seen three different copies of this law. Originally you couldn't buy a case at distributors at Pennsylvania. Now they're doing six packs. They were talking about doing singles, and they actually backed it off and did six packs. But if Al, who is a brewer, he has to sell his beer to Westies, who then can distribute his beer across wherever. You know, he goes to New York and Pennsylvania, all across. But he also has a pizza shop that has a cooler full of beer that's Miller Lite and, you know, some other craft beer. He has to buy it from Westies, who also sells six packs now. So I think that's the problem he has now, is that they can sell six packs. He can sell six packs. They're probably going to be cheaper. And even if they're the same price, what did he get out of this deal? I'm a six-pack shop. My life goal is to own a six-pack shop, a wine store, and a liquor store. Pennsylvania owns the liquor. You can't do it. It's by the state.
But now, does he have to buy it from Westies, or can he buy it from the wholesaler?
They are the wholesaler. So they're one of the, you know, they have Will Bosch. There's some other distributors like Will Bosch and who don't have a retail space. But I know that certain beer has to go through Westies. And that's how they get that stuff. Hey, can I get Oscar Blues Barrel Aged 1050? Well, that comes through Westies. So maybe not a Miller Lite. Maybe they can get it through a Wilbosch or wherever. But those specialized beers, they go from Shangy's to Westies to Al. And that's the problem I have with the system, is that Al can't just say, hey, Oscar Blues, let me have a six-pack or, you know, eight cases of Barrel Aged 1050, and I'll sell it. He can't do that. He has to go through certain channels. And every time you go through a channel, the price goes higher. And the price goes higher, which means the consumer pays more money. And that's the problem I have. It's such a bullshit system. And this new one where I love Breskies. It's our local, one of my local distributors. They're amazing. They're great. Great customer service. Westies, fuck Westies. They're the worst customer service. They have the worst organization. I hate Westies. I hate you. I don't care. They've actually asked me to come out and meet with them. I hate you. You have no organization. Your place is dirty. You have nothing labeled. You have the worst store I've ever been to. But you have to go to them because it's Pennsylvania, stupid laws. But Breskies is a great place, well labeled, well organized. But now they can sell six packs and growlers. Well, what does Al get out of this thing? He's a bottle shop. Well, can he sell a case of beer now because they can sell a six-pack of beer? Why does he not get anything out of this? That's the problem I have with it, is only people benefiting are the distributors because they have a much better lobby group. And I know number one rule of this podcast, no politics, but fuck that, because that's what politics is all about, is they have such a good lobbying group, and the Tavern Association and all these other guys have a shitty lobbying group, and they can't get anything done. And that's the reality of the way things work. Probably across the country, but I know in the state of Pennsylvania.
No, I agree with the Tavern Association thing. I've been talking about that for 15 years now with how much power they wield and every single thing. Oh, wait, Sunday sales at liquor stores. Oh, we're all going to go out of business. Like, relax. You guys, and nobody's ever going to go out of business having a bar. Like, it's just that much. But, yeah, I do think it might be a little overreaction. I think that the prices are going to be – I don't think prices are going to go up necessarily. But, you know, maybe I'm just looking at this short-sighted. That could be.
Prices always go up. It's the only direction they go.
You know, it's funny.
Fair point.
I think the problem that's going to be with this is that we're going to get a lot of shitty ass stale beer. And the thing is, what happens is now these all these places like, oh, great, we can sell six packs and all this stuff. So they bring in more inventory and different, you know, combinations. Well, if I'm going to a distributor and I can now actually buy six packs, I'm going to buy a six pack of, you know, an IPA, a stout, or, you know, I'm having a Thanksgiving in my house next week. So I'm going to buy different styles for different people. I got really heavy craft beer drinkers. I got people who are not at all. I got a little bit. So I'm going to buy 666 instead of buying a case of that, a case of that, a case of that. So they're going to have all this inventory of all this shitty-ass stale beer. It's going to be sitting there for 6 months. So when you do have some – go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you bring up a great point because – I have a buddy who lives in Atlanta, and he's a certified beer judge. And he will go into Publix and be like, you guys got to pull this beer off the shelf. It's old. And when I walk into the Giant, maybe on Linglestown Road over here, I notice some beers are old. And it's creating another problem where anyone can just have beer now, and it's not being taken care of, and it's not what the brewer intended. And I think that's another whole problem that's
literally almost a whole podcast, because that's going to be a huge issue, is because these non-craft beer drinkers, my mom, that kind of person, is like, hey, my son comes to Tampa, I order a High Life, man, this is really great, I'd love to get some. Well, she goes to the store and the six pack is a year old and it tastes like shit. She's like, well, I'm just gonna stick with my Yingling. So that's going to hurt the growth of craft beer, in my opinion, is that because it's going to be this old, stale, shitty beer. And that's going to happen. I mean, it's definitely going to happen with this new law.
And you said again, Florida, somebody would be like, oh, this High Life, whoa, this is bullshit. You know, yeah. Ah, crap.
And High Life is like one of my favorite beers I ever drank. And
it's awesome.
You might have a shitty version because it's been sitting there. There's a local pizza shop by me that I didn't even know sold beer. And I never went in there because they had the worst health violations of all time on the online. But I went in there
never,
one time.
Never look at those.
I should never look at them. But like, the good thing about Al, he actually has had 100% on his, which is very impressive. It's really hard to do because I worked at a restaurant. It's really hard. But this guy had like the worst shit ever. Like I was like, I would never eat here. But I had to go and just like, I have to see what's in here and get a slice. And I went in there. There was a thing of High Life. That shit had to have been there from like 3 years ago. There's no way that this truck stop pizza shop was ever selling any High Life. And it had to be awful. So someone buys that, they think that's what an IPA tastes like. And then they're like, this is fucking the worst thing I ever drank in my entire life. And that's the kind of thing I think will happen with these kind of new laws where they're giving power to a distributor but not to a six-pack shop. Why can't I, as a six-pack shop, sell wine and sell singles and cases and whatever the fuck I want to sell? Liquor. I should be able to sell liquor in that. It's crazy that I can't open my own business and sell products that people can buy at other establishments in the state of Pennsylvania. And that's the problem I have.
Good luck with the liquor.
Yeah, good luck.
That was a great rant. I just want to focus it a little bit because there – I think it could be lost for some of the people that are listening to this in the conversation. So you're advocating for a more laissez-faire process to kill the three-tier system, get the Commonwealth out of the liquor business completely, and to just really open up alcohol sales in Pennsylvania. But conversely, as it's opening up right now in this way, you think it's going to be damaging to this system. And I understand where you're coming from. I understand what your point is. Your point is that because it's not fully opened, we're going to have restraints that are on the system and unfair advantages, the system picking winners and losers, that is going to depress what actually happens and what's available to the consumer.
They're picking winners and losers because West East is our local place in Harrisburg. They are guaranteed money. Basically, they are the distributor that gets the beer, and you have to buy it from them. So that's ridiculous that Al can't buy or distribute his beer through Shangy's or through someone in Pittsburgh or through someone in Wilkes-Barre. Who cares? Why does he have to distribute his beer through Westies? Why can't he sell it direct to the consumer anywhere in the state? They have this new law where you can do 192 ounces a month, whatever. Get the hell out of here. Why can't you open it up? Why are there laws on where you have to buy beer? You have to buy beer from this guy. Well, guess what? That guy at Westies is going to have bad customer service because he's guaranteed business. If you put competitive pressure in a laissez-faire system, he is going to fail. Because other people were like, I would never buy from him. I'm going to go to Shangy's, which in Allentown, which is like the cleanest place I've ever been to, well-organized, and they're very nice. They're great. I'm like, of course. I personally drive 70 miles to Shangy's to buy beer instead of Westies because I don't like Westies that much. I know I'm probably an asshole, but I don't care. Fuck Westies. I love Shangy's.
You're not an asshole. You just
I might be, but maybe not for that.
You're killing polar bears to get fresh beer. It's okay.
That's goddamn right.
I've known George for so many years. Oh.
Hey. It's the way the cookie crumbles, man.
It's okay.
All right. So, God, that was a beautiful rant. It's been a while since we had you on, Dave. It's so good to have you back.
Hey, when you get into certain things that piss me off, I love going to rant. So I know we got to wrap this podcast up. I'm sorry to take all Ed's airtime.
No, Ed, let's wrap it up.
You guys did the milkshake beer. I showed up late, like a jackass. Like, hey, I got a new phone.
Yeah, you didn't show up because you were waiting for your new phone. Your priorities are so fucked up.
Are they?
I mean, if it was iPhone 7 day, I would have been torn.
Yeah, seriously, you'd have taken 3 days off. It would have been you would have flown to Florida for that.
Yeah, I'm an Apple cultist. I people know my problems. All right. We're going to wrap this up. Just talking back about the brew day, it was really a fun day. Al was a gracious host. I'm going to make the disclosure at the beginning, but I'm going to make it here again. He did buy us some beers, and he bought us a pizza. But that doesn't color what my opinion of the process was. Look, you can't buy me off for $10 worth of beer. The brewing process was great to watch. Learning more about the intricacies of what it takes to build a proper brew and to build a business was great. And I was thankful to be there. I want to reach out and say that Eric, one of our most loyal listeners and a faithful reader of the blog, he was there too. It was really great to have him there. He had some really great questions and interactions, and it was really nice of him to show up. It's always good to meet one of our few fans.
No, he was actually great. He had a lot of good different point of view stuff. It was good to have somebody like that there, and I think he learned a lot too. That's what I like about Al, is he's willing to let other people. This is like the third time I've done this with Al. I've either had a tour like this or brewed beer. He's like, hey, I'm going to show you what it's like because it's really not easy. And I love that he does that for his customers and the fans of his brewery. It was awesome. So I think that he got that same kind of experience that I got, which I was really glad he could.
Al is very welcoming to anybody at any time. Like, if I've ever had a guy in from out of town, I'd be like, hey, Al, I got this guy in from, you know, he's in from Chicago. And he'd be like, oh, you want to come back and look at the thing? Like, he is that guy that's just like, hey, come back and check out the brew house. Like, and you just impress your friends. He's such a sweet guy.
One last thing. We talked with Al about this, and we talked about what a gracious host he was that day. There are times there are people on the internet have been less than gracious back to him. And for things that he has said, positions he's taken, right or wrong, those individuals have lashed out in a really negative fashion. And I have to say that a lot of those attacks at times have, in my opinion, appeared to be personal. And that's ridiculous. He's a good businessman. I think he's always got the interest of the customers in mind because he sees his customers as the basis for his business.
And he's got four kids now? So, yeah,
four kids.
He's a busy person. That's a full-time job, but people don't realize they don't have kids.
Yeah, he's a busy man. the shit that people give him online, by and large, is just out of order. And people need to keep in mind that whenever they are slinging these arrows, that it's a hardworking man on the other end. All right.
Yeah, Al is definitely a sweetheart and embraced the local business. He's doing a great job.
Yep. All right. Anything else for the good award, or then we're going to kick it to part three. Anything else, guys?
No, no. Let's talk about – let's just drink this beer right now.
All right. Let's do it. All right. Welcome back to part three of our three-part legendary podcast. I'm welcomed again with Ed and Dave, friends of the show. Thanks for coming back on, guys. We've now had a chance to taste the finished product. We had the pineapple, we had the peach from the legendary milkshake IPA, and we're going to give you our thoughts. Dave, I'm going to kick it to you first.
Okay. I was very happy with the outcome. I was very nervous because I was the one that kind of forced out a do something out of his comfort zone and make this beer. So I was like, this better be good, because he made a lot of it. I think it was ended up being 44 total kegs, not only for his place, but it was distributed across the state and maybe even other states. Monk's Cafe in Philadelphia had it, which was unbelievable, which it was I couldn't believe it. I actually got a text from someone in Philadelphia with a picture of it, and I was freaking out because that's a great place, probably the best place in Pennsylvania. But as for the taste, I was really surprised. Tired Hands has this down. They're the experts, and nobody's doubting it. I saw people on Untappd saying this is not a Tired Hands. I was like, oh, of course it's not. It's the first time it was being made. It was something new. But the peach was fantastic. It had that peach finish, which I don't love. I think it would have probably benefited from some Galaxy hops. But I thought it was more of the Tired Hands style, real creamy and milkshakey, and it just was delicious. And on a summer day, you could crush eight of those by my pool. The peach, I thought, was a little bit better. The peach, it actually made it less milkshakey. I don't know if you guys agree, but the consistency was different. A lot of people thought it was two completely different beers, but it was really, I don't know what the peach did to it, but it made it not as that same mouthfeel, but the taste was point on. It was perfect. I could drink those all day. I thought it was one of the best beers that Pizza Boy has put out for the IPA style. I thought it was great.
I agree. I do think that the peach ended up being a little bit thinner. Kind of felt like maybe the peach ate through the body a little bit. The pineapple was, I thought, really good. I thought it was delicious. It was a little bit more viscous and kept a little bit of that creaminess. I thought the pineapple in that one was a little bit more prickly, if that makes sense. And whereas the peaches were a little bit more mellow and all at the back end. It was also kind of hard at first, because when I got the Crowlers and mealed them back home, they were mislabeled. And so at first I was like, wait, which one is this? But luckily I had bought three Crowlers of each, and the other ones were properly labeled. But the first two, I didn't have a clue which one I was drinking, really. And I have them there side by side, and I'm going back and forth, and finally I'm sharing with other people, and they're like, this has to be wrong. And I'm like, well, we got to open these other ones, because if all three of these are wrong, I'm gonna lose my mind, because I'm like, damn it, this pineapple tastes like peaches. Which totally freaked me out, but in the end I think we got it all worked out. But the flavors were I thought spot on. The hint of vanilla really just kind of bolsters, everything that shows up there, and really does kind of play that trick on you. Like, is this a milkshake? Like, it's a neat way to play with a beer. Ed, what'd you think?
I like the pineapple more than the peach, but they were both fantastic. The peach to me anyway, my palate, it gave me a little bit more bitterness on the end. And I like the smooth finish of the pineapple a little bit better. I know that's probably the opposite of what a lot of people think. I like the way they went down. They tasted great. And I love that finish, the smooth, milky, lactosey finish. Why does it have to be Tired Hands? I don't even get that line of thinking. It's its own thing, much to Al's chagrin. Like Dave said, it's one of the best beers they put out. I think everything has been fantastic. Loved it. I hope it encourages him to do it again. I know he probably doesn't want to, but I thought they were great. And I'm not just saying that because it was you guys' invention. I thought it was spot on and loved it.
Yeah, I think now that this is kind of out there, actually, there's the sole artisan up in Wilkesboro area. They're putting out a pineapple milkshake this weekend. So if you're listening to this is in December. I think you're right. It's okay to make a style that somebody else did, but at first, the first person that makes that, it's like, oh, you're biting off of Tired Hands. Oh, you're doing this. I was like, they have a cool idea that other people could take and have their own take on it. And Al's flavor profile came out in this beer, and it was different than Tired Hands. So, and that's, I think, the great part about brewing is somebody invented the Northeast IPA, whether, you know, whoever you want to say it was up in New England. But that style is fantastic. So let you take that style and make your own version of it. And I think a milkshake should be similar to that. And I think the brewer shouldn't be afraid to do it. Just do it in their own style. Don't just try to copy and make a Heady Topper or a Treehouse. You know, hey, I'm going to try to make a Julius. Well, you're not going to make a Julius because they, you know, whatever they have going is great. Make your own style. Use your flavor, your touch. And I think that's what people respect.
And Al and Terry are mad scientists. I mean, let's face it, they're going to do what they do, and they're going to throw middle fingers at you each step of the way and be like, hey, this is just what we're doing. Screw you. We're going to put a bunch of hog fat in a beer. We don't give a shit.
Literally, they actually did that.
Yeah, they did put a whole bunch of hog fat in a beer. That was some – in like three different beers. That was some weird shit.
The spicy one was rough. Oh, man.
Yeah, I didn't do that one.
That's a Nexium protection beer only. That's
Don't go in without your wingman. Looking at Untappd, which is the arbiter of the masses and of the hoi polloi, the plebes, if you will, of beer drinking, Legendary Peaches has 674 check-ins as of the recording here, with an average rating of 3.983, which is that's pretty solid. I can go through and read some of the comments, a bunch of which are mostly, it's not people bitching about it not being Tired Hands. And yeah, as we covered, no shit. The pineapple, which has 674, it has 550-ish check-ins. That one came in at 3.988. Being like hyper specific here with Untappd ratings.
Yeah, it was at 4. It dropped down a little bit. But when I looked at it, there was only a couple, one of the Murrins and a couple other ones, but it was one of his highest rated IPAs.
Yeah.
Which 3.9 sounds like it's a bad score. It's actually a really good score for Untappd. It's hard to get a 4.
It really is. 3.9, I'd be really happy with that.
Over that many ratings, that's a damn fine score right there.
Yeah, because there's so many people that put in that one star or two, and like, this isn't Tired Hands. I'm like, oh my God. I was like, just judge the beer for the beer. Yeah.
Or people who are like, well, I don't like IPAs, so one star. Like, then why are you drinking it, dumbass?
Yeah. If I like, I hate certain styles. You know, I hate Hefeweizen. It's like I think it's the worst beer that's ever been made. I just don't rate it. I'm like, I hate this style. But I'm not going to judge a beer because I hate that style. I'm just like, I just won't rate it. Just want to check it in to get it off my list. And also, the comments of the ingredients and people are like, oh, this has too much of this. I'm like, that doesn't even have it in there, asshole.
I always get called out because I rate everything 3 and up. Like my Miller Lite's like a 3.5, and one time I rated something a 3 and somebody immediately texted me and was like, oh my God, what's wrong with this beer? Is there something going on? You never rate anything under a 3.5. What's going on? I was like, I just don't like it. And so it's a strange thing. But yeah, it's tough to get good scores on Untappd across the board like that. That says a lot for Al. And I'm sure he looks at that and he's pounding his fist on the desk going, oh, damn it. You know, now I got to make it
easy pretzel.
That son of a bitch.
Yeah. And there were some people on Twitter reached out to Al and you know, asked, is this going to be into the rotation? Are we going to see this again? And the answer was an emphatic no. So if you like the beer or if you haven't tried it, you need to get out now quickly and give it a try. It did hit some limited distribution. It was down on at Monk's. Golden Crust, I think, had some, maybe Tommy's Pizza. If you're familiar with those spots, you know where to go.
Yeah, there were some other places in Philly, I think, that saw it. I don't know all the suburbs of Philly, but I saw a couple people. I was like, holy cow, that's, you know, it actually went to distribution elsewhere. So that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I had a guy I work with who's one of my customers, and he sent me a text as well, and he was like, hey, I'm at Monk's, and he was sending me a picture of the menu. I was like, yeah, that's my beer right there that I, you know, helped create. And he was like, holy cow, and he ordered it, and he said everybody there was loving it. So that's pretty awesome for Monk's. You know, I was like, wow, that's, you don't get much better than that, than getting your beer on at Monk's.
It's got to be a good feeling seeing those Center City check-ins with the beer you helped create, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. So we mentioned that other people are starting to make this style. Last night, I swung by the brewery at Hershey. Ryan DeLutis had brewed a milkshake style IPA, and this one was done with mangoes. I picked up a snifter of it, and it too was a nice beer. It was had that creamy element to it. The hops that he had used with this were Nelson Sauvin and Moteku, which is something I'd never heard of. That's another New Zealand hop variety. The hops, I think, were a little bit more dominant in his version. The Simcoe that we had in the Legendary, I thought, were kind of subdued by about now. When we at first poured, I thought the hops were a little bit more prominent. In the end, I think that Ryan was on to something. The mango, look, I'm not afraid of having some chunks in my beer. His mango had a lot of chunks in there. The mouthfeel is definitely going to freak some people out, or some individuals who are not used to such a viscous beer with so many particulates in it. But
I hate mango. I think mango should never be in beer. I mean, it's very rarely good. I mean, yeah. Al has had some that have been just, you know, there's some of the stuff just undrinkable. And even Tired Hands, they had, Mango Tango. Literally, you know, they sell 300 cases. They didn't tell anybody that was probably the worst beer they ever put out. And people were freaking out and wanting their money back. And, I mean, they were literally giving refunds because mango is so harsh. And I think it just needs to mellow out. Those are the kind of beers that need to sit for a while.
Yeah, yeah, mango can work. You got to do it right, though. It's a real weird balance. Like, I think blueberry never works in beer. It's just too aggressive, and you can't use it, and people still seem to do it. But mango, you can do it. You just have to have the proper balance with the hops, and they got to kind of, like, even each other out. It's a tough one to use. You either do it right or you do it wrong.
Yeah, the mango in this wasn't too bad. He's going to be releasing it also with peaches. These are test batches, and it's going to apparently be on all summer, so Al won't have it, but the brewery.
I hope that this starts a trend that everybody has that on tap for the summer. I mean, I like, you know, summer beers. I love Kolsch's, you know, different kinds of styles like that. But I really like that this is a great style to drink. It's just something you can drink. My wife is like, this is fantastic. I can drink this all day. She's not into craft beer. She loves to try them. She loves ciders and wine. So this is a beer that, you know, my wife could like, and other people are like, this is great. I had somebody that doesn't like really beer at all for Thanksgiving. They're like, this is fantastic. I can drink this all day. And I think that's a great way to get people into craft beers. Hey, let's try something that's crushable, you know, and I know that word's used too much, but that's what it is. It's something you could just drink over and over again.
Yep. And a couple final thoughts, and I'll kick it to you for yours, but recently, it came out that we had 5,005 breweries here in the United States, and each of them are or should be trying to find their way of differentiating themselves in what is increasingly a crowded market. And the way to do that, in so many cases, is going to be developing new styles. And when those styles really hit, we're going to see them propagate out. And I think this is one of those styles that we're really seeing an emergence on. And because of that, it's kind of exciting to get in on the ground floor on it. Dave, thanks for giving Al the kick in order to try this.
and for helping us all tag along. A special thanks to Al and Terry for having us on his brew day. Couldn't have been a finer host. Anything else? Dave, you got any final thoughts?
No, I think it's just great. I've mentioned earlier, I think it's awesome that Al and Terry let us, you know, knuckleheads get in there and hang out all day and even be able to, hey, Al, I'm texting you about a recipe, about a, you know, a gigantic batch of beer that, and he actually valued my input and discussed things back and forth. And that's what's great about craft beer. I know, you know, sometimes I'm kind of negative out here and the pessimist of the 5,000 breweries, because I just think that it's hard to run a business. But if everybody is like that, I mean, you could be successful. You have to work really, really hard. It's a lot of hours. Like, I would love to open a brewery, but I don't want to work 100 hours a week. I got, you know, two little kids. No, absolutely not. So God bless all these guys. I mean, if you're willing to put in the work, listen to your people and say, hey, this is what needs to come out. You know, this is what's working. This isn't not. I think they all can be successful, but a lot of people are not going to do that. So it's awesome that Al did that, and I'm excited for the future for him.
Ed, what do you got? Final thoughts.
I think it's great. I thought the beers are great. I think it's a great trend. I know it's kind of a, hey, we're following this example type of thing. But it's also brewers getting out of their comfort zone. I mean, you know, Al didn't want to do it, but he did it and did it well, you know, and probably to shock at him and Terry as well. Like, hey, this actually turned out great and people love it. And you were talking about Ryan. I mean, he was taught how to brew from a guy who only brews like 4% beers. He does alt beers. He does Pater's beers. He does like very, very light pale ales. And now Ryan's doing these milkshake beers. And you're like, step out of your comfort zone. Make what sells. You're going to be on cruise control. But don't be afraid to get out of your little shell and be like, hey, I'm going to stick a damn Christmas tree in this beer. And if it's good, it's good. If it sucks, it sucks. Hey, but at least I'm trying something different. And I'm putting it on Instagram that I'm shoving a Christmas tree. And just do that stuff because it's fun and it's exciting and it's new. And, you know, don't be afraid to fail. Just do something different. If it hits you in the brain and you feel like you want to do it, just do it. And that's the fun of it. Creativity.
I agree with that. Guys, thanks for coming on. Thank you for joining us on that brew day. Also, a special thank you out to Eric, a very loyal listener and follower of the blog, who joined us on the brew day. It was nice to have him there. And it's always good to have people that listen to the show reach out and say hi. So if you ever see us out, please do so.
And I have to give a shout out to my man Ian, who I randomly stayed at in Indianapolis when I was watching the Penn State Nittany Lions win the Big Ten championship and get screwed out of playoff. But he was like, oh, you're on Bearcat on this podcast? I was like, oh my God, you actually know who he is. So that was pretty awesome to randomly run into somebody who's a listener and has a really close friend who's a listener that was in the 717, and he's like, yeah, she loves your show. I was like, that's unbelievable.
Snuck that NCAA dig in there. I love it. I love it.
Mark Emmert, fuck off. I hate you.
we're going to cover that on an after show coming up. Don't worry. All right, guys. Thanks for coming on. This wasn't a complete shit show, so I think we'll do it again. See you later.
Yes, yeah, 7 a.m.
Love
7
it.
7 a.m. Yeah, this is not – I can't believe we're doing this. All right, I'm going to stop.